Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
From Postcard from the Past and Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is a place where we go to the shoebox under the bed, or in the attic, or in the spare room, and investigate its contents as we consider picture postcards and explore what it is that causes us to keep hold of these precious cardboard rectangles. Each time, I welcome two guests, and it's their postcards that act as small clues to direct us towards memories, mysteries, and doubtless stories. I'm Tom Jackson, and I'm delighted to say that today my guests are writer Susie Boyd and a man who has made it his mission to make us consider the possibilities of garden sheds, Andrew Wilcox. Andrew and Susie, welcome to Podcast from the Past.
Hello.
Thank you.
Now, Andrew Wilcox works as a web developer by day, but since 2007, he's been running the Shed of the Year competition. I can't think of a nobler endeavour. And celebrating sheds and what you can do with them. And Andrew joins us today with a CF40 postmark, is that right?
Approximately, yes.
So where's that?
Well, that postmark is from my spiritual home, which is Blaenclydach in Tonopandy, where, not related to the postcards, but it's the first time I ever experienced a garden shed.
Oh, really? Oh, gosh, this is a seminal place for you. What was the story? Whose shed was that?
It was my grandfather Glyn's allotment. Oh. And he had a couple of sheds, him and the old geezers. And there was an amazing space. It was a brilliant place to go as a child and learn how to garden and just talk a lot of rubbish for a few hours.
But in a sociable way.
Yes.
And so did that childhood experience of sheds, did that sort of, is there an unbroken line between that and your endeavours now, or was there a rediscovery of sheds?
It was a rediscovery about 20 odd years later when I was looking for a garden shed online, and I was thinking, no, these aren't sheds, these aren't the sheds I remember as a child. So that was the moment that I thought, wait a minute, let's look for proper sheds. And that's the start of this mad journey I've had for the last 20 years.
So this is a journey that can't end, because you're looking for sheds that, you know, the sheds of our pasts, you can never go back to them.
Of course, but every shed evolves and every sheddy evolves, and it's, well, hopefully it'll be carried on after I'm long gone.
You started something you can't finish.
Is there a sense that a shed is somewhere where you can really, really be your sort of true self?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, my grandfather used to. My grandmother never knew he smoked, but he always used to smoke in the shed, little rollies. And I didn't when I was 9 or 10. But
glad to hear it.
Yeah, but you know, they had a little stove. There's a brew coffee and Bovril, and it was brilliant. It's I don't really think about it that much, and this has given me the, you know, it'll appear in the back of my head every now and again, but it started something really special.
Very good. I've often sort of observed in this podcast that so many of the things we end up pursuing or being excited about start really very early in our lives.
Yeah, and you know, he was alive until his 90s, and he was still he was a former miner. He And then he, up until his late 80s, he was still working in the factory, helping out, brushing up. And, you know, he's he was a great man. And, you know, but, yeah, it was the sheds that, you know, I wish he'd seen, you know, seen this. He probably would have given it short shift, but, you know.
I think he would have been very proud of it, sure.
Yeah, well, I hope he would have.
It is impossible to impress your family as life has shown us all, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And it does, that doesn't stop us trying, does it?
No.
It makes us try.
Yeah. Now, Andrew, do you still send postcards?
I still collect postcards. If I go somewhere, you know, where I used to work, you know, in my day job, I used to work around the country, and if I saw a nice postcard, I'd pick one up. But no, yes. I haven't sent a letter for about 10 years. I get a letter off my mother every 2 weeks. since the lockdown, yes.
Right.
And mostly it's the conversation we had the week before on the phone. But you know, it's. Yeah, and I quite enjoy reading them. That's funny. So
I think that's quite unusual.
Yeah, well,
that's lovely.
Yeah, during the first lockdown, you know, she doesn't live that far from me, but you know, we were both in isolation, and she just got she got to writing some letters. So I bought a load of nice envelopes and nice writing paper and got those sent to her, and I think she really enjoyed it. She used it as her escape, really, from the lockdown.
Excellent. Oh,
that's very interesting. Does she ever enclose a 50 pence piece?
I did have a check for my birthday last year, so.
Oh, that's very similar.
There you go.
not a record token or a book token or, you know. But,
hang on a minute. You can't stop stipulating what you want as a gift.
I'm 50 this birthday, so hopefully she'll send me something decent like a record token.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a Rolls Royce.
Your poor old soul.
No.
Now, Susie Boyt is a writer whose work includes journalism, memoir, memorably. Her My Judy Garland Life is a wonderful meditation on entertainment, compassion, glamour, tracing a complicated and uncertain yellow brick road through her own life. And her latest novel, Loved and Missed, which is pretty new as we're recording this today, is a tough, funny, sweet story of love and addiction, and more love. Susie comes to us today with it's a rather exotic postmark, I can see, NY10036, have I got that right?
Yes, it's just sort of Broadway in general. I'm one of those soppy souls who grew up thinking that show business is the highest calling, and so I've always got my sights on Broadway, even if I'm doing the dishes or picking up children from school. And I've got quite a sort of active inner chorus girl who I feel that would have been my, if I could have done anything, that would have been my first choice.
But you're not in show business. You're a writer. But you,
I know.
This
what
tension,
you do?
How does this tension, how do you deal with, I suppose you deal with it by writing, but.
Well, you know, I suppose there are parallels between writing and performing, particularly in terms of characterization, bringing a character to light, making them believable, making people invested in what the character does and that sort of thing. I think that is quite like acting. So plus, and you know, when you do literary festivals and that kind of thing, it's quite good in a way, because if you're an actor or a chorus girl, people have very high expectations in terms of performance. But if you're a writer, if you could manage any sort of show business at all, people think it's absolutely amazing. So
great.
It sets the bar nice and low, which is
very smart,
a great advantage.
Yeah, she was great for a writer.
quite. I'm very, very happy with that.
This thing about show business being the highest calling, this finds its focus in your Judy Garland obsession, or your obsession, I think.
Mm. Yes, I grew up feeling very, very influenced by her. I think in part because I was a very sensitive child, and I was always told that I had an indecent amount of feelings, and also that I expected too much from people. and that I had to sort of get my feelings in check or I wasn't going to have a happy life, which is quite a severe thing to be told when you're about five. Gosh. And when I heard Judy Garland in no way hiding or being embarrassed or ashamed of her strong feelings, but by communicating pure, unadulterated feeling as if it was pretty much the best thing in life, there was a tremendous sort of smash of fellow feeling. And I felt that instead of my highly emotional nature being laughable and a bit tragic, that it might be the making of me. And that was a wonderful message to receive as a small child who nobody quite knew what to do with.
And it's this sort of emotional directness that she had in her performances?
Yes, and which sort of by definition is the antithesis of cool, which any very strong feeling will be. But yes, I think that she gave me a sense as a child that to be the person in the room with the most feelings might make you the best person rather than the biggest idiot. And that was just what I needed to hear right then.
You do describe her performances very well. And when I was reading the early bits, actually, that it reminded me of stuff I've seen Judy Garland. I'm not a Judy Garland fan by any means.
But I mean, Nobody's perfect.
No. Though she is one of my top three entertainers from Minnesota.
Okay. With Prince, and who's the third one?
Bob Dylan.
Okay.
Three great entertainers in their own way, I think, absolutely. So there's something in the weather up there. Mm. But this, I think her later sort of tragic performances are well documented, and people have written a lot about them. But I think you capture this kind of absolute exuberance and the sort of emotional openness of her earlier work really beautifully.
Oh, good. I mean, she did absolutely knock her audiences out, probably unlike anyone else. You know, that when she sang at the Palace, they said that people were sort of lolling in the aisles and completely forgotten their name, that the orchestra gave her three standing ovations even in the middle of a song, which is pretty well unheard of. And she did sort of really undo people. She said sort of rather modestly and perhaps cynically, I hurt people where they want to be hurt. But the sort of extreme power of her consoling people whilst asking for consolation herself was really extraordinary.
It's funny, I'd not thought of it before, but there is a sort of parallel with some other sort of great singers. I'm thinking of the Egyptian singer Umm Kulthum, as I do not that often, but she did this. I think she had a similar effect on her audiences. You know, one crack in her voice and the audience would be sort of swooning and cheering. And I think that maybe Garland had that thing where she just, people focused right in on every emotional moment and did it well.
And rooted for her so strongly and wanted her to be all right. And I mean, often at the concerts, the reviewers review the audiences, and there's one that says, it was like bedlam superimposed upon bedlam. And you just think, wow. What? You know, so yeah. it was.
That wouldn't be a good review for many artists.
Well, you don't want that of the review of the stage, but if that's the audience, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's something's happening, isn't it? Something's happening if that's the review. Mm. Well, Susie, when did you last send a postcard?
You used to just send a postcard, but now it feels like you're sort of sending a postcard in inverted commas or in italics or something, that it's a bit ironic. But I just try and send them in an ordinary way. The last one I sent was, I went to Chichester to see South Pacific, and I stayed the night with my husband's cousin afterwards. And I haven't had a summer holiday, so just going to Chichester for the night and staying at someone else's house was quite thrilling. Exactly. And I wrote a postcard the next day saying that it had pretty much been my summer holiday and how much I'd loved it. And just my husband's cousin and her husband had sort of taken me up to bed and pretty much tucked me in. And I felt like that for a moment that I don't have any parents anymore and I'm always looking for new ones. And I suddenly thought, maybe these are my new mum and dad kind of thing. But so that was really nice. And then having, you know, you can know people for decades and never have breakfast with them, can't you? And that was really pleasurable, having breakfast with them. And so I tried to show my appreciation in a postcard I wrote.
Yeah, the thank you postcard, I think, is probably the one that still holds on. I think people still do the thank you postcard from time to time.
I'm going to send thank you postcards from now on.
There you go.
Okay. One of the things I love most about having a party is waking up the next morning and hoping for the good reviews to come in and getting postcards in the coming days. I've got a friend who writes such a lovely postcard that he's always on the top of my list, and he'll write things like, "Dear Susie, superlatives fail me," and things like that, which gorgeous to wake up to.
5 stars.
Yeah.
Well, look, before we hear about the cards that Susie and Andrew have brought along, I'll give you a quick one of mine. This is, of course, a postcard from the past card, like I do on the Twitter and in my book, an old card with a bit of the message. Not a card that I've received or a card that I've sent. It's a card that's been claimed from the storm, really, just, you know, from an old box somewhere. So this card is of... It's quite a nice card. It's a picture of a sort of big country house, I suppose, a sort of Tudor mansion by the looks of it, seen through some, what are they, sort of little pine trees, I think, and with a bit of a sort of standing pool in the front. It looks a little bit like it's not really moving. And there's some daffodils as well. So it's a kind of interesting image. It's a J. Arthur Dixon card, famous for these rather nice sort of muted colours, sent in June 1974, a long time ago, and it was sent to Bishop Stoke, Eastleigh, and it's sent by someone who doesn't give their first name. Now, what was it that intrigued me about this? Let's have a look. Having a wonderful holiday, enjoying every minute. My husband phoned me last night. The decorator is coming in next Monday. He tells me he has only burnt the toast twice so far. I think it's a sort of jocular thing, isn't it? It's saying, you know, because the wife is away, the husband's making a hash of simple jobs like making the toast. But I just thought it was a sweet little detail. Plus, of course, you know, the problems of having decorators, and everyone knows what that's like. I'll do another quick one. This is a Cardorama card. Cardorama. And it's a picture of a lifeguard's sentry in Whitehall on a nice sunny day with a bright shadow. I'd say it's taken about midday by the looks of that shadow, maybe 11 o'clock. And he's standing there fixed like a sort of waxwork. You know how they never move, they never even flicker their eyes and people come up to them. And this one was sent in 1969. It's quite old. Sent to Stockport in Cheshire by someone, a group of people called Barbara, Stan and Howard. And what amused me about this, what intrigued me about this, is the way these cards can sometimes capture people's preoccupations at the time, things that they're thinking about. So it's someone from out of town come to London and says, "We've walked here, we've walked there, we've walked every darn where, and we've only sat down for an eat." So, you know, it's like you go to a city, we've all done city breaks, you end up, you know, sore feet. It's having a great time and loving every minute, seeing all kinds of sights, from traditional to hippies. And I thought, that's interesting. You know, hippies are like a landmark in 1969 in London. They probably didn't have them in Stockport. So there you go.
I bet they didn't have boots as tall as that in Stockport. Those are the tallest boots I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. You see them on that show where they go fishing. They have shoes like that, boots like that, when they're in a loch or something.
Waders. Yeah, waders. Yeah.
That's the word, yeah.
That postcard reminds me of, you know, I used to go maybe once a year to London as a child. My mother, you know, I'm not a fan of the musicals, but my mother was, so we always used to end up going to what was the popular, you know, Starlight Express or Barnum, which I remember I enjoyed, but it's not my sort of thing. But I remember standing by those guards and trying to make them laugh, and they were so good.
I think it's probably an unofficial tourist duty is to go and sort of try and say something irresponsible in front of them and see if... But then you get the ones on the horses, and it's a little bit more scary because the horses are quite big, actually.
They are big. Like, nowadays, it'll probably be some TikTok thing that someone will try and, you know, get a reaction.
Yeah, and in fact, every so often someone does something inappropriate there, don't they? And it all becomes a bit of a scandal in the... Anyway, very good. Well, look, I should remind everybody listening to this podcast that images of these cards are going to be on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see this chap standing there in the sunlight. You can see the the house behind the trees, and you can see that we haven't made it up. Now, Susie and Andrew, you've been kind enough to do your homework, to dig out some cards for us to discuss today. Andrew, we're going to start with you. What's the first card you've got for us? This looks like a classic tourist card to me.
It is. We used to go to Torquay probably about 6 or 7 times when I was a child. And I always wanted to go to the model village. Oh. Maybe there's a slight shed thing there. I'm not sure. That was in the background.
Little houses.
Yes, exactly. And you know, you look back at these things, you know, in your subconscious, you think, oh yeah. And I used to just love. I'm not a train geek, but I am a little bit. But I used to love any railways. I never had a model railway, and I just used to love looking at the railways at these model villages, because the details are they're amazing. And there's quite a few Twitter accounts I follow which make these model buildings, and it's a very middle-aged man thing to say, but I'm a middle-aged man, so I'm really getting into like these people doing these models. And when I was going through some of my stuff when I found this, and I thought, oh, I don't remember that, seeing that, but I remember the postcard and I remember going to Torquay. And as people will see on the sign, it's called Beeching Halt, which, of course, I assume the card was produced after the Mr. Beeching's terrible cuts to the British railways, you know, which we felt quite deeply here in Wales. And right. But at the time, didn't even think of that, because I didn't, I was a child. I didn't have any. I just loved the gardens and the model village and the trains and the people. There was always something happening. There was always a dog peeing on something.
Yes.
There was always, they're amazing, these model villages, and they still are. And I want to go to see a model village now.
So this is Babbacombe Model Village. I think it was one of the most famous ones.
You bought
this card there?
I bought the card there, yeah. And I've actually got about three other ones I found.
Have you?
Of that time. And there's no date on it. I didn't write a date on the back. But it's probably about 1983, 1984. Right. Or maybe a bit late, when I was about, 10, 11, I think. And one of them has got modern buildings with all the lights on and everything like that, which I was like, oh, it's amazing. Each one has got a little light in, for the time is brilliant. But this one, I love it because you've got two trains. One was a passenger train, and one's is carrying goods. But I still love trains. I still love model villages. I still love gardens.
They are funny, these things, because I think to children particularly, this little stuff is appealing. You know, we make stuff out of Lego as a child. You have little, but then when the trains move through, you think, oh my goodness, it's alive! It's a kind of there's some little category shift there that suddenly you're moving from what you're used to something quite magical.
Yeah, and and there'd be street lights if you went, later in the evening, and it was perfect. And sometimes there'd be music, and there'd be merry-go-rounds, and it was brilliant. And it's a good memory now, because I had a good time. I went with my father, and he wasn't that interested, because I used to spend hours just wanting to stand by these little models and look at every detail,
But a good model village, I think, repays that, doesn't it? Because, as you say, there'll be a dog peeing on something, or a fireman, or a streaker on the cricket pitch, or something.
Things. Yeah. And I think this village is still going.
I think Babbacombe's still going.
I did look it up, and it seems as popular. They haven't, in this modern age, I think we all need a little model village in our lives.
Do you remember
how big the actual things were?
I was going to say, is it very big? But that sounds a stupid question.
I'm just trying to get a sense of the scale of it, particularly through a child's eyes. Would the train sort of come up to your shoulder or to your knee?
No, about the size of your foot, I think. Size of an adult foot, I would think. Maybe a little bit bigger.
I'd never thought of it. There must be model villages of different sizes. So yes, Beaconscott, the figures might be bigger than Babbacombe.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, you know...
it doesn't say 1 to 12 scale as you go through the door.
I remember driving past the sign on the motorway saying Model Village and the kids in the car thinking it was going to be sort of where Kate Moss and people lived.
The final question on model villages. Is there a model village in the model village?
I think there was at some point.
I think that's a rule.
Yeah, and it's like sometimes, like near where I live, we've got Caerphilly Castle, which is big. But there's a small model of Caerphilly Castle as you walk into the castle. And that, I, even now, you know, at my age, I sort of always stop and have a look and think, you know, so maybe it's a, you know, it, maybe it's a, you appreciate the work that someone's done to create these, you know, it's, you know, I haven't got the patience to make models. I used to, another thing I found when I was going for this postcards, I found that my membership card for the Airfix Modellers kit
did
in 1982, and I tweeted it out, and I was like, and people were going, oh yeah, that's, I remember being that. I can't remember any models I made, but I was a paid up member.
Good. Anyway, I should ask, with you've seen a lot of sheds because of your interest in the world of sheds. Have people, are there people who've put riddle model railways inside sheds? There must be.
Yeah, there's, I know at least a dozen. So yeah, there's.
It's a theme. It's a genre.
Yeah, you know, men of a certain age, retired, like get to the shed, you know, and oh, I'll build a model, you know, and they'll take some of them take over the garden, some of them. There's a couple of chaps who've built small railways in their gardens that just go five or 6 feet, and it starts at their shed, and one of them's built the shed on top of the railway lines, you know, former railway engineer, and it's amazing because it's sheds, and I could talk all day about sheds, but
nothing wrong with that.
But it's the childhood thing of okay, I'm gonna make models of something, but then when you get to a certain age, you can make bigger models of it. And
yes,
that's, you know, if you've got the time and the space, then yeah, we're all kids.
I suppose it's innocent. It's innocent. It's better than plotting acts of terror or something in your shed. Yeah. So it's got to be applauded.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that does that.
Traditionally, that's what's so good about a shed, because they're sort of cozy and comforting. But also traditionally, there are places where things that are quite untoward have taken place, like in old Hollywood films, people often have a, particularly during Prohibition, people often have a whiskey still or something like that. Or is it they have got a slightly racy side as well, haven't they? Which we mustn't forget.
Well, it's still going on. There's still one of our previous winners distilled gin in their shed, and you know, all above board. But so sheds can be. It's not just a space, it can be used for anything.
Well, very well. Thank you for taking us back to the miniature pleasures of Babbacombe. Let's move on to you, Susie. What's the first card on your doormat? This is a rather striking gentleman, I think.
Yes, well, this is a picture of the French actor Jean-Louis Barrault, who I think this is taken in the 50s, and was sent to me by my friend Lulu, who I think must have cancelled some arrangement that we were meant to have. And she wrote, "Dear Susie, I found this treasure of photograph today. God, that sounds terrible. My hero and yours.
Oh.
I feel a bit better now than Sunday and Monday, and I'm sorry if I wasn't very talkative. I didn't feel like talking.
Anyway,
hope we can do something soon, maybe next week. I hope Madeleine's, etc., is bearable. Love from Lulu." Madeleine's was a lingerie shop that I had a Saturday job in.
Oh, so this is going back a while.
Yeah, and it was quite a excruciating atmosphere of kind of lilac and turquoise and lemon coloured matching bra and brief sets to be sold to the mature lady who I had to be very respectful for and call my lady as they came in, and it was a pretty insane job. It's a Starbucks now, that shop. Anyway,
that's a safe bet anyway. But
how old were you?
16,
17. In St John's Wood High Street. And Jean-Louis Barrault, we adored from his amazing performance as Baptiste in the film Les Enfants du Paradis, which seemed to represent so many of the things that sort of meant a lot to us. Again, people really suffering for the noble art of entertainment. In the film, he plays a mime artist who actually based on a real mime artist and who's so full of sort of life and full of sorrow in a kind of way that would really appeal to you as a teenager. My mum and my mum brought up five children on her own, quite sort of straitened circumstances. But once a year, we used to go to Paris on the boat train, which took... you get to Victoria Station at 10 p.m. and get to Paris at about 7 o'clock in the morning, so you wouldn't have any sleep or anything. So you had proper jet lag to get there. And we'd always go to the Cirque de Verre, which is in near the Bastille area, and that was so sort of steeped in show business, and it had a live orchestra, and the circus itself was in a purpose-built 1850s circus building with kind of stables at the back for horses, and they had sea lions clapping like in a children's picture book. We always sat very high up because of being skint, but they had sort of tigers with whips, and people in the front row sometimes got whipped, and so it was really sort of... And they had these clowns who had white court shoes, male clowns with a sort of 2-inch heel and little white sort of hats, a bit like fezes. And they were so sort of strange. And then they had chorus girls, very, very skimpily attired, a bit like you'd expect at the Moulin Rouge. And at the end of the first act, they'd all lift up their skirts, and it would spell the French word for interval on the back of their pants.
That's something they should bring in a lot more shows, I think. That would be very popular.
I think the word is entr'acte. I think they still do that. So Jean-Louis Barrault represented all that. And more than that, in the film Les Enfants du Paradis, everyone's in love with the wrong person. Baptiste loves Garance, who's spectacularly played by Arletty. And Garance sort of loves Baptiste, but she's got together with Frederick just because he's a bit more robust and not so soppy. And then Baptiste's wife is completely in love with Baptiste, but he's in love. So there's a sort of all this thing of, seemed to me when I was a kid, everyone was in love with the wrong person. You know, A loved B, B loved C, C loved A. What could be done? And so he sort of he brought that to mind as well. It's rather a camp photograph of him. And the way his hands are displayed to me sort of speaks of some sort of impatience. But the elephant in the room is that my father looked quite like that at that time of the postcard. So there's a little bit of him there as well. But so I suppose, and I had a Filofax then, which my mum's best friend had given me, and it had a little plastic insert in which I had this photograph. So whenever I was writing my homework down or anything, he would sort of be there saying good morning to me. So quite a sort of powerful presence in my life then.
So when had you seen the film?
I think my mum took me to see it at the cinema quite formally, and it goes on for hours and hours.
Is it in two parts? Yeah.
And the first part is miles better than the second part, to my mind. And I think I only saw the first part probably until I was quite old. But,
Where would you have seen that?
I'm trying to think. We lived in sort of Islington, Finsbury Park, so I can't imagine it would have been on anywhere local. We would have probably had to have, at the very least, gone into the West End. I can't ever remember a time not of seeing it. I think perhaps it was talked about a lot before I did see it. It's definitely one of my favourite films, and the script is by the poet Prévert, so everything's very beautifully expressed, and a sense that all the characters in the film had show business running through their veins, but it might kill them kind of thing, that it was a sort of dangerous predicament. That spoke to my and neglected in A Chorus Girl as well.
Yes, you'd suffer for your art, but it was worth it. Or you were obliged to anyway, you couldn't help it.
Or it would be my honour and my greatest privilege of my life to suffer for my art.
I beg your pardon.
Fair enough.
But I think it's a great image because, I mean, his hand looks like it's a wax hand that's been attached because his arms are at a strange angle. It doesn't look like it's his. And he's got a faraway look in his eyes.
Mm. And he's got that thing where the left eye looks sort of sorrowful and the right eye looks quite inquisitive. I like when people's eyes have different expressions.
I think he looks like he's in a sort of ballet studio when he's looking, you know, he's looking at the dancers and saying, you know, you're not doing this good enough. He looks quite stern.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I can see he does look like a director, yeah.
Yes, yeah, and that's where we used to see people. He's sitting backwards on a chair, isn't he?
Before it was made famous by Liza Minnelli or Christine Keeler, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, it's the showbiz way to sit.
Oh, of course, I always sit like that.
You know, you don't get a high court judge sitting like that. You don't get, the newsreader sitting like that. But you do, if you're in the world of show, that's what you do.
Yeah, and I think that judge and that newsreader should think on.
After all, that's cheap glamour, isn't it? Just sitting backwards on a chair. That's easy. Anyone can do that.
Yeah.
No sequins required. Very good, very good. Now, I will just do a quick one of mine now. This is of dubious taste, really. It's a multi-view. So, by which I mean there's more than one image on the card. It's four images of Edinburgh, and in the middle is a small boy in a kilt and the whole Scottish outfit with a bonnet with a feather in it, and there's a lame pun, a wee bit scotch. It doesn't even make sense, really. I suppose it means, you know, like a glass of scotch, I suppose. But and he looks rather... I suppose he looks quite pleased to be there. And you can even see the sort of line between the backcloth of the studio he's been shot in and the floor. This is sent in 1953, so this goes back. This predates all of us. And it's sent to Aberdeenshire from Edinburgh at 1 p.m. on the 30th of June 1953, since you ask. Again, it's this thing of the details that actually happen to people on their trips that they bother to write down. Always intrigues me. It says, "My dear Sheila, just a PC postcard to let you know that I'm having a lovely holiday. I have seen the Queen 6 times and the Duke 8 times. They were really lovely."
Stalker alert.
And it says, "But give you all the news when I get home." That's from Elaine, maybe? Not sure. But I just thought, yeah, you're hanging around waiting to see them. That's not just a chance encounter outside Holyrood or wherever it would be.
It's very nice, the postcard functioning as a sort of interim update till the real one comes, isn't it? That, you know, you need to know what my holiday's a bit like now and I'll give you all the details. And I find that very charming as a sort of holding pattern. And that postcards say, "I may be on holiday, but I haven't forgotten you." And that's very charming as well.
Yeah, though I think maybe, you know, Sheila Watt, when she received this, probably thought, I know enough now about your holiday and stalking the royal family. I don't need, you know, what more, are you going to itemise each sighting of the royal family when you get back? I don't know.
You don't think that she's longing for the slideshow?
I think she's waiting for the bottle of scotch, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the early days of postcards, that a very common message, like at the beginning of the 20th century, would be, "Here's a postcard, I'll be writing soon." So it was an interim before a proper letter. And there was a clear distinction that a letter was a proper thing and a postcard was just a scribbled note. But in this case, she's going to update her face-to-face. I think she's a friend or neighbour who lives nearby in Aberdeen. Anyway, you know, the Queen and the Duke were clearly very visible. I mean, unless they were there one day and she sort of turned her back and sort of turned it back again 8 times to count as 8 viewings. I don't know.
Blinked.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I used to do quite a lot of work with prisoners, and it was quite a thing that I noticed if you were going on holiday, some of the people would say, would you send me a postcard? And then they'd have it in their cell and it would look sort of flash that they knew someone who'd been to Brighton or wherever you were going. And other people, other prisoners found it really, really tactless and said, don't send me a postcard, it'll just wind me up. And it was interesting that they sort of fell into two different camps.
I've never thought of that. So, and you were a sort of associate of these people. You weren't a friend or a family. You were doing some work with the prisoners.
Yeah.
Gosh, and you obliged. You sent cards, did you?
Well, to the ones who wanted it, yeah.
Not to the whole of you win.
No. My brother was in prison for a bit, and he wrote lots of people's love letters, and got quite a good reputation in the sort of Serrano de Bergerac rank.
Oh, so they were really written as if they were from other people.
Yeah, they asked him to because he's got a good turn of phrase.
Wow. I can see him now licking his pen, thinking about it. How shall I put this? Goodness me. No, I'd never thought of people sending cards to prison. They could obviously couldn't return the favour. They couldn't send a card saying, having a grim time. No, well, quite. having a lovely time in the scrubs. Wow. I think, do you think that still happens? People still send postcards to prisons?
I hope so. I mean, it's so tough being in prison that you'd think that anything that would... And I don't think people have that much access to phones and internet and stuff, so I think letters are still quite a big thing in prisons, is my understanding.
I suppose a postcard also does make perfect sense because there's no danger of any illicit enclosures because it's just a piece of card. Actually, it'd be quite a practical... And it's open, so there's no... You know, I suppose you could be saying something in kind of code, but really it's a fairly transparent way of communicating. Oh, there's a whole area I'd not considered. Postcards to prison, there you go. There's another chapter for my book. Very good, very good.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Podcasts from the Past, the Postcard Podcast, and my guests today are the man behind Shed of the Year, Andrew Wilcox, and writer Susie Boyd. Here's a surprise. We've received a postcard. And it's a postcard of Leeds. It's a multi-view of Leeds showing a sort of municipal building and a tower block and a park and a fountain in a river, lake, I think. And the card is from Jean Field of Leeds. Hello, Jean. And it says, the answer is mushroom. Well, I'm sorry, Jean, that's the wrong answer. Right, on with the postcard stories. Andrew, what's the second card you've got for us? This is something fairly abstract looking.
Yes, I picked this up. My musical tastes are slightly different. I've always been into heavy metal and things like that and hard rock. But in recent years, I've been listening to a lot of movie scores and things like that. And I'm a gamer as well, and game scores, and it's beautiful. It's sometimes, you know, you just sit there and you just listen, and you know, I've bought in recent years, I bought quite a lot of movie scores. Anyway, this postcard was, I went to see the composer and former pop star Clint Mansell in Birmingham Philharmonic, and he was playing his film scores and the odd bit of other musical thing, and I was brought to tears because it was, his stuff is so beautiful. It's my favourite piece he does is from a film called Moon, which is came out about 15 years ago. It's about a man on his own on the moon. There's twists, but it's beautiful. It's lonely. But the score just works perfectly with it. And I probably listen to that score, I don't know, every month. It's always on.
Is this the Duncan Jones film? Have I got the right?
It is the Duncan Jones film. Yeah, and it's beautifully filmed. But it's the score that gets you. It's an amazing thing. Anyway, I went to see him with an old friend of mine up in Birmingham, and these cards were in the foyer, and they were signed, and I thought, oh, that's you know, it's on my desk where I work, and I always look at it, and when I look at it, I always think of the amazing music.
We should describe this for the listener. Well, tell me what you can see there, because this is not a model village in Babbicombe.
No. Well, if you squint, it could be. But
the colours are actually quite similar, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. Well, looking at them next to the colour. Yeah. It's like a test card,
right?
With all, you know, a rainbow of colours, and there's some text I can't make out, and it looks like it's on some old TV screen.
It's sort of degraded, isn't it? Like it's sort of off a VHS or something.
Yeah. Anyway,
there's
the last
dodgy aerial.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, the last colour reminds me, the black and a little bit of the purple, reminds me after the concert, we went to a local pub and Clint was there with all his family because he's from that area.
Wow.
And we had a few pints with him and he was a lovely bloke, really down to earth. And, you know, he was there with his whole family. My friend I went with, you know, was a fan of his on social media, and they got to chatting as well. So he bought us a pint and a whiskey, and we had a nice conversation, and then he went off with his family. But it was a nice bookend to his music. You know, he was a normal, down-to-earth lad, but he produces this, you know, heartbreaking music.
So this is the soundtrack to your life a lot of the time? You have this playing, do you?
Yeah, I do. When I'm working, I have it on in the background. And then some, you know, I'll listen to the radio, I'll listen to the news. But sometimes if I'm feeling a bit stressed or a bit, you know, can't think of what I'm working on next, you know, I'm sick of seeing pictures of sheds today. So let's have a, yeah, I know. And I'll just put it on in the background. And Moon is the album that always keeps coming up because it's the one I've listened to probably 1,000 times.
Very good. And well, it's nice to hear that you met someone you admire and found they were as you hoped, because, you know, it's not always the case.
No. And yes, he was. So I follow his stuff, and you know, I just hope he'll when he comes, if he plays down this down Wales, I'm sure my friend will come from Birmingham to see him. So, you know, it's, yeah, it was lovely.
Very good. And that's very much the card that kind of, you know, it's never been sent, it's never going to be sent. It's that little souvenir, it's a little totem, it's a little memento, that's the word.
Yes, a memento. Yeah. And, you know, well, this is the point of this. These postcards are bringing back those memories of a really, you know, meeting my friend who I don't see very often and just having a really good time. And, you know, well, I'm going to be listening to this album this afternoon.
Well, it's fine. I love the way the postcard itself looks a bit like a picture of a television. You could see if you didn't have a TV, you could sort of have that on the mantelpiece, and if you squinted, you could be, you could almost think it was.
Have a gramophone on in the background.
Exactly, and some neighbours doing mime.
Well, I reckon I could have guessed what the story would be for the Babbicombe, because that's kind of what it's there for. But I wouldn't have guessed from this colour lineup chart with a slight degrade on it that this was the story. So look, thank you for unpacking that and you know, perhaps opening a door on Clint Mansell's music.
Yeah, he's a genius.
Very good. Susie, you had a last-minute substitution. So I believe Henry James was pulled off at half-time and this, I don't know what you'd call it, this message card sort of came in at the last minute. But can you first of all, tell us what was going on there with your mindset?
Well, I was going to have this early photograph of Henry James, partly because he's been an important figure in my life and explained a lot of life to me, particularly my life, and so he's powerful. And funnily enough, I had a book launch about 10 days ago, and I heard people say, "How do you know Susie?" And some people said through Henry James, and some people said through Judy Garland, and I felt that presented quite a diverse front.
But yeah, you're covering it well. Yeah, your publisher will approve.
But then I had tried to find this postcard and sort of given up. But then when I went for my summer holiday to Chichester for one night, I used a kind of overnight bag that I haven't used for about 20 years, and it was full of old stuff. And I found this postcard very pleasingly next to an autograph from Donny Osmond.
Wow.
So
that's a whole other story.
And there was also some letters. I read two, but I thought if I read more than two, it would do my head in. But in one of the letters, someone uses the word precious about me, and it's completely ambiguous whether they're saying precious, meaning a bit sort of fake and fussy, or precious, meaning valuable. And you completely can't tell. And that I'd never sort of thought of that. And the whole letter, if it's the one, is read in a very different way from if it's the other. So that occupied me for many minutes. But I remembered this card very clearly. We were living in a tiny, quite strange house in Finsbury Park. And it had the Dole office at one end of the street. So it was very famous for that reason. And there was a corner shop around the corner, not on a corner, as very few corner shops actually are. And they had a few cards, one of which was this. And I think it's meant to be a get well card. And I would have been about 16 at this time. And I was at school. I'd moved to a different school to do my GCSEs. And it was a sort of good change for me. But my home life was a bit insane. I had a lot to deal with, don't want to go into it particularly. And there was a big sort of coping, consolation, recovery was at the forefront of my mind, in that I wanted to sort of roll out those things, which I was not seeing much of at home. And I bought this card and I sort of learnt it. And I thought it was, I love the name of the author for a start, which is very complicated. And I just Googled that name this morning to make sure that that person never existed, because it does not sound like a real person. But I think I had an idea that ingrained in femininity was a kind of skill of making everything better for everyone. Or I was very late to feminism in life, and I saw a sort of woman's role as smoothing and helping and curing in, I suppose, what an armchair psychologist would say was a very sort of codependent way. But I did have this. There was a idea about me that I cheered people, and that I knew I was good in a crisis, and I was. I suited a nursey kind of frock, etc. And somehow this card sort of summed all that up.
Well, you'd better read it to us, because the listener is in anticipation of this, really.
Well, the poem is called "Her Smile," and it's on a pinky lilac card with a more mauve floral border, and it says. He was worse for a while in the hell of such pain, but a nurse with a smile made him well once again. So whether someone imagined, and it was in the get well section of the card display in this little shop. And on the back it says, This most succinct 23-word poem, Her Smile, first appeared in print in London on February the 28th, 1978. Although the poem is seen to be a mere octave written in simple anapastic monometer, it is nevertheless a meaningful and highly effective Occidental poem, cut and polished with the brevity of an Oriental poem. The poem Her Smile in this postcard form might be sent as a get-well card to a patient in hospital, or as an appreciation card it could be presented to a nurse by a grateful patient.
Goodness me.
So well, a postcard that comes rubric. With instructions.
Exactly. Here's what you could do with it. Well, it's sensible. Good marketing.
And I've written next to this.
Go on.
I've written next to this little explanation in my secondary school, probably fountain pen, an arrow, and then the question, what are they like? Question mark.
Well, yes. I mean, the poem itself is very peculiar, isn't it? This he was worse for a while. I mean, worse than what? And worse, something's getting worse. Then I suppose it's the opposite of getting better.
Yeah, I guess you went into hospital. You went downhill, and herself improved things no end.
Yeah, with a smile. But and it's ambiguity, isn't it? Is it a nurse with a smile made him well again, or was it with a smile that she made him well again?
I know it reminds me our medical practice then. The doctor was very religious, and he had a sign in embroidery on his mantle saying, "The Lord will heal." And we always used to find that not very reassuring.
Yes, and I'm taking the afternoon off.
Quite.
But it's a bit like one of those embroidered sort of epigrams, isn't it?
It's
meant to be propped on a mantelpiece, I suppose.
It's got faint carry-on notes as well, hasn't it, that, you know, you can imagine someone saying, I bet she did, kind of thing. I don't know.
Depends on the nurse, yeah.
But you can see as a teenage person bent on consolation, it was a pretty good match. I did find it moving. Funnily enough, quite often I browse in card shops and buy cards that are completely impossible to send. I had one, a postcard with pictures of a sort of First World War hero on it saying, "My thoughts are constantly with you." And I've had it for years, but I've never felt I could send it to anyone because your thoughts are never constantly with just one person or on one thing. So it felt I haven't quite met the moment yet. And I also have one with a picture of four beetroot of varying colours saying, "You can beat this," which...
Now that's good for most people.
It is good, but of course there's always something a bit impertinent about consolation. And if someone was genuinely ill, we all know the language of sort of fighting a war and stuff is generally unwelcome and a bit crass. And so I was trying to think, you'd have to send it to someone who'd had a really tiny setback, wouldn't you? You can beat this, like maybe
so
they'd lost their shoe or something. Or
Petru cutting incident.
Yeah, well, that would be perfection.
Precisely. There you go.
If either of you ever hear of anyone who sustains that injury, please let me know and I'll be right there.
Yeah, I'll be straight on the line. So you bought it because it spoke to your feelings at the time. You didn't ever expect to send it.
No, I bought many of them and I did send them to
did
people.
You?
I think partly because of the thing on the back, that making it seem less soppy and more bizarre.
Yes.
So
a hint of irony then as well.
Yeah, and the colouring is very 70s in it, is with the pink and lilac and.
I mean, I go through boxes and boxes of old postcards, and not always that old. You know, they seem quite new to me. And sometimes you come across these sort of modern, sort of religious cards, and they often have a picture of a gorilla or something, a photograph of, and then a little line of scripture. And the relationship between the two can often feel a little bit uncomfortable. In fact, if it's not a gorilla, it's normally a daffodil. Daffodils seem to get people thinking a lot about these sort of
I've seen epigrams. The daffodilly ones, but not the gorillas. I'm now thinking of a gorilla going through the eye of a needle, which isn't quite the correct text. The postcard I really wanted to find was a picture of some boys crowding round a newspaper that my dad sent me when I was at school, and underneath the picture it said Matron was on page 3 again. And I hadn't heard from my dad for about a year and a half, and then this postcard arrives and I'm thinking, what the... And then on the back it said, I'm sure you are already, but if not, I thought this postcard would make you the most popular girl at school. Love, Dad. So
very good.
Yeah, I was pleased to get it, but it spoke of a different time.
Yes. Yeah, but that's an example of a postcard being a sort of a light way of sending messages. It's not as heavy as a letter, so easy to do in that sense.
Yeah.
And when do I put pen to paper to write a letter to people? Never. But I will drop them a line, and sometimes I think it's as much the physical effort is less, but it's also the emotional burden is a bit less as well. I don't.
And
have
also, the picture on the postcard is a small present, isn't it? So it's not all about the written communication.
Yeah, and it does half the work for you if you choose it right.
But do you write letters of condolence? Because those are the main ones I write.
Ain't that the truth? Yes, yes. I was going to say when required, but look, that's of course. You only send them when you have to.
Yeah.
But is that what letter writing has come to? It probably is.
Well, in lockdown, I wrote quite a lot of letters because of having more time and an awareness that people were alone. And I wrote to some people who, friends of the family, who when I was 21 gave me a set of 5 saucepans that I still use. And I wrote to them saying, I still use those saucepans, you know, and every single time I use them, I think of you, just thought you'd like to know. And they're now in their late 80s and they were utterly delighted. And I had a letter back by return saying, so glad to hear this.
Yeah. Well, stuff can be a symbol of feelings, can't it? And those saucepans are the symbol. That's brilliant.
I think now giving a saucepan for a wedding or birthday present is a good idea, because I think people do think of you when you use it. If your aim is to, if it's all about you, you're going to get a lot of result from your gift.
Yeah, a saucepan might even be one of the best. You know, I can't think what you would use more often, because you're going to smash teacup.
Once I gave someone a really huge saucepan, which was on their wedding list, and she wrote back saying, thanks so much for the saucepan, hope I never have to use it.
that's a bit of, jocular way of doing it, isn't it? Very good. Well, look, these cards have left me with still with more questions than answers, I think, but I like that. They sit there with their strange unresolved meanings. Thank you both for sharing these with me and with the listeners and with each other. There's a phrase I repeat without apology. I never know where the cards will send us. And I'm really thrilled that you took the time to dig around and find these cards and share them with us. Another quick reminder for listeners at home, images of these cards are going to be on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see an actor sitting backwards. You can consider the notion of a smile curing your ailments. You can have a look at a cryptic test card, or you can indulge in the tiny pleasures of Babbage and Modern Village. Before we let Susie and Andrew off into the actually glorious sunshine today, got one more postcard for you both. Normally I would pass this across to you, but because we're separated by the digits, I've already prepared an image of it. So there's one last card. Can you see the last card on your sheets in front of you at all? This is a sort of oversized card. Andrew, can you tell me what you can see?
A really nice 1960s office block, iron flat. Is it flat? Apartment block?
I think if you had it in front of you, you could see a sign that says hotel, but it's a little bit harder to see on the screen.
Yeah.
But so you were saying you like brutalist buildings, so you're in luck.
Yeah.
It's a sort of huge shoebox, really, isn't it? Very, very regular. Not high rise, but it's 5-6 floors.
Yeah.
It's not a quiz. This picture is a postcard which is a gramophone record. So this postcard can be put on a turntable and you can hear music on it. You see the dot in the middle by room. Yeah. Second floor, room 5. That's the hole for the spindle to go in. Now, my esteemed colleague, Tom Berry, who is very, very technically adept, has actually put this on a turntable, recorded the sound, and if we listen carefully, we should be able to hear what it sounds like. There you go. I think you need to put your ruby slippers on, Susie. So he's singing in Hungarian, since you ask. because these were very popular in Hungary. A lot of them were produced in Hungary. This one's in a town called Kecsemet. The hotel is still there. It's a wellness hotel. So what do you reckon? Could you listen to this instead of Clint Mansell, Andrew?
I can listen to anything when it...
Perhaps not as sort of considered and introspective.
No. I may want to put it on reverse and see what he's actually singing, but...
Could we have a works outing there?
I think so. I always said the same thing. It's pretty good quality for a piece of cardboard.
Yeah.
This one hasn't been through the post. It's been sent in an envelope.
Right.
But it's from the 1960s, so it's, I don't know, 50 years old. And, the grooves are literally just pressed into that shiny foil on the top of the postcard.
Excellent.
But it is made of cardboard.
Impressive.
I'm quite enamoured by the giant lamp, street light.
Yeah, because that's quite a long way back, isn't it? It's huge. Yeah.
It's got a lot of personality as well, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Looks a bit like my grandma.
Well, really. As the concrete hotel continues to rotate at exactly 45 RPM, that's it for this time on Podcast from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guests for sharing the postcards from their pasts, Susie Boyd and Andrew Wilcox. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me, @PastPostcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardorstudios.co.uk.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.